Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good news, bad news, and crazy news for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we were talking just yesterday about the number of Senate races that are really tight, right there within the margin of error, and Republicans in decent position to pick them up. One, of course, is Louisiana, and Bill Cassidy is right there neck and neck with Mary Landrieu. It'll probably end in a runoff. But what you talk about in the Morning Jolt today is that Bill Cassidy has found a good way to turn a national issue into a state and local issue. And the issue is the border and the number of illegals coming into this country and how little the administration is doing about it and how much the administration is doing to basically transplant those illegals into various communities around the country. As you point out, there's a website that shows state by state and county by county in those states where these illegals are being placed. And Cassidy's done a good job of pointing out throughout Louisiana where those folks have been placed, nearly 1,300 of them. So what at one point seemed like this general crisis along the border, all of a sudden in Louisiana, which is not on the border, it becomes a very real issue.
Yeah, there is a good quote from a Massachusetts sheriff who had said, "We are all border states now." That may seem hyperbolic, you know, that the communities that are dealing with this are oftentimes very far from the border. And this idea that, it's something you can kind of tune out of your mind. Well, chances are, for a whole bunch of counties and a whole bunch of different states, the Department of Health and Human Services has released these unaccompanied kids to some sponsor. Now, I don't know if this means they have tracked down relatives in the states or what precisely they are. They were once in custody and now they're not. Supposedly, at some point in the future, they'll have some sort of hearing. But as we all know, the odds of you ever showing up to that hearing and or getting deported are fairly little. Cassidy does a nice job of pointing out, one, that this is not just a border state issue, but two, with all these kids, as I kind of put in a subsequent post on Campaign Spot today, school districts are on the hook for educating those kids, or at least there's a memo coming from the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. Now, I quoted a lawyer who's from a lawyers group out of the mountain and west states. This is actually, no, that's a misinterpretation of a Supreme Court statute or ruling. That by golly, it's not discrimination to say we're not going to educate illegal, children who are here illegally because they're here illegally. Now, there are some communities where the school districts are just rolling in money and everything's hunky-dory and the streets are paved with gold and they have plenty of resources. But there are a lot of school districts where the money's tight. And if you add more school, add more kids to the school, that is that puts more pressure on resources. The schools are designed to handle a certain number of kids. And in just the last couple of months, we've had tens of thousands of kids being added to this. And if the attitude is, well, doesn't matter if the kids are here illegally, schools have to educate them. You're putting a lot of pressure on that, and that's less resources for the kids who are here legally. Now, if you're wondering, why have I not heard a lot of screaming about this in Washington? Well, it's because all the Washington elites send their kids to Sidwell Friends and fancy private schools that don't have to deal with these problems because these illegal immigrant children are not going to come to Sidwell Friends. They're not going to be allowed to get on the campus. John Edwards talked about two Americas. There is very much an elite of this country for whom the problem of illegal immigration is entirely theoretical. Or if they do interact with them, it's as busboys and gardeners and waiters and hotel maids and other, things. And they like them in those roles. And by golly, they're hardworking, so why won't we let these people stay? It's not their kids who have to be in an overcrowded classroom or have a more challenging education environment because there's been this giant influx of students. And, of course, many of them are ESL, English as a second language. You don't want to be cruel to these kids. You don't want to be mean to these kids. But, because of our open border policy, we've basically said to the rest of the world, we will be the education system for the rest of the world. And you cannot allow this relentless influx of children and just assume that the U.S. education system is just going to be able to handle it. And this sounds like a Cloward Piven attempt to say, well, we're just going to have to give the schools a lot more money because we've decided to import a whole bunch of students from other countries.
Speaking of Cloward Piven, let's move on to the second martini now. And a lot of people are worried about the president doing a major executive power grab when it comes to immigration law, jumping off of the last topic we just had. And now it appears he may be seriously considering one in the area of climate change. This is a story that broke from the New York Times last night that has gotten a lot of attention by Coral Davenport. The Obama administration is working to forge a sweeping international climate change agreement to compel nations to cut their planet-warming fossil fuel emissions. But without ratification from Congress, The negotiators are meeting with diplomats from other countries to broker a deal to commit some of the world's largest economies to enact laws to reduce their carbon pollution. But under the Constitution, a president may enter into a legally binding treaty only if it is approved by a two-thirds majority of the Senate. American negotiators are instead homing in on a hybrid agreement, a proposal to blend legally binding conditions from an existing 1992 treaty with new voluntary pledges. The mix would create a deal that would update the treaty and thus, negotiators say, not require a new vote of ratification. Jim, it's like this guy's spoiling for a fight.
Spoiling for a fight, and also, who he's the constitutional law scholar who constantly seeks to subvert constitutional law. The New York Times article noted that his whole regulation on power plants was all done through executive order and EPA. It was not done through legislation. He's decided that Congress, because it won't do what he wants, is now irrelevant to the system. And that is just flat out not the way the Constitution is set up, not the way the U.S. government is supposed to set up. In this case, it is very clear. The Senate votes to ratify a treaty, or technically to vote on a resolution that ratifies the treaty. You can't say, well, but if the president really wants it, he can waive it. I guess I should mention this is part of his, powers as commander in chief. Maybe he'll try to assert that authority. What's fascinating is that the French ambassador to the United Nations for climate change says, well, yeah, we understand the problem with the Senate, so we're going to try to work around it. Like, the president and foreign leaders are basically saying, here's how we're going to work together to not require Congress to approve this, which is just like it's entirely the system is backwards. We really have a radical group in charge of the executive branch right now, in which their attitude is that they want to get what they want and they don't care how they have to go about it. It's kind of fascinating the part you said there, where like, well, we passed a different treaty on the same topic back in 1992. Was that part of the Kyoto Treaty, by the way, Greg?
I don't know if it was that or the Earth Summit. It didn't specify the article.
Remember, the Kyoto Treaty went down like 97-3 in the Senate, right?
Yeah, it was overwhelming.
I mean, it was like even back during the Clinton years, people thought, oh, Republicans used to be reasonable, but now they're these crazy right-wing radicals who insist the Constitution be followed. Back then, there were only a handful of Democrats who were willing to vote for this. Undoubtedly, the Democrats of today don't want to have to vote on things like this. They basically want these policy changes to go through without having to actually vote for them. And that's, a complete subversion of constitutional government, checks and balances, and the way our government was set up. What's kind of fascinating is Obama's doing this, everyone around him is doing this, and it seems that there's nobody really around him saying, hey guys, maybe we should just try to get, maybe we have to just see what we can get through the Senate, and if what we get through the Senate is watered down and not exactly what we want, well, that's the way the system works. Alternately, we can go to the American public and say, hey, all of you have to use a lot less energy and accept a much lower standard of living in order to save the climate. And some people may buy into that, but I think my guess is most people won't. And that's the way the cookie crumbles. In politics, you don't always get what you want. But clearly, Obama and his crew decided, well, we're just going to toss out the Constitution if it stands in the way of us getting what we want.
All right, on to martini number three now. And it was last Thursday, Jim, that Andrew Johnson and I talked about a new ad from Mark Pryor in which he actually touted his vote for Obamacare, although he didn't refer to it as Obamacare or even the Affordable Care Act in the ad. And so we were talking about, man, his internal poll numbers must be looking terrible if he's embracing Obamacare. This guy must be getting pretty desperate. Apparently, we didn't know the half of it last week. Here's the latest Mark Pryor ad.
The Ebola outbreak is worse than anybody.
The outbreak is, quote, vastly underestimated.
Tom Cotton voted against preparing America for pandemics like Ebola.
Congressman Cotton voted to cut billions from our nation's medical disaster and emergency programs.
He was the only Arkansas congressman to vote this way.
Just like he was the only one to vote against Children's Hospital.
Instead, Cotton voted for tax cuts for billionaires funding his campaign.
Rather than protecting our families.
Good Lord.
My God. First of all, it sounds so
cheesy.
Come on.
These ads
are
terrible. Is this a Saturday Night Live ad?
That's Joe and Mika on Morning Joe this morning. Jim, so the statement from the Cotton campaign said apparently Tom Cotton is to blame for the Ebola virus, crabgrass, and male pattern baldness. So if this is what Mark Pryor's stooping to in late August, his late October ads are going to be really fun.
Tom Cotton, if you stubbed your toe this morning, he made you do it. It actually is a point where he supports Ebola, really is exactly where I would usually go to make the joke. The satire is going to be a little weak on that one. I guess we should say a little bit of kudos to the Morning Joe crew for not, nodding like a bunch of bobblehead dolls and saying, ooh, that's a bold move. That might really resonate. That taps into our collective fear of Ebola. Because, you know, because as we know, all government funds to deal with emergencies, Greg, they always only go for useful spending, right? There's right. never any waste in them. It's really a good idea to have armored personnel carriers in tiny towns and, you know, the local pumpkin festival to have SWAT teams around it and things like that, you know. In a way, you know, I suppose we can interpret this as, you know, Senator Mark Pryor concedes. Obviously, if you're thinking of donating to Tom Cotton or you're thinking of volunteering for Tom Cotton, help him out. But this is a nice panic sign, not a sign of a confident campaign.
On that bizarre note, Jim, we will talk to you on Tuesday. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
See you Tuesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus from Radio America. Andrew Johnson will be in for Jim tomorrow. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.